Welcome to In Conversation with Lyndon Terracini, a podcast where we meet the extraordinary talents, both on stage and off, working at Opera Australia. These conversations were all originally filmed for our streaming service, OA TV. You can find more online at tv.opera.org.au, as well as full productions and behind-the-scenes footage. Well, ladies and gentlemen, my very special guest today is the esteemed designer, Brian Thompson. So, Brian, welcome to OA TV.
Hello.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
I remember when I was very young, it's quite some time ago, believe it or not, seeing a production of Jesus Christ Superstar that was the first production in Australia. Andrew Lloyd Webber's first musical or hugely successful musical. And you were the designer. Jim Sharman directed it, I think. It was the beginning of the late John English's career as Judas. Reg Livermore was Herod, I think, in that production. And as you can see, it made an incredible impression on me because it was really the first, the first rock musical that I'd seen, and probably the first of its in that genre. Can you talk a little bit about what it was like in those early days, working with Jim and various people? And
I dropped out of architecture.
And so you were studying out, were at UNSW or?
I was, I started off in Perth and I came over to Uni of New South Wales. I did second year and I was very set on becoming, a good architect. In 1966 maybe it was, I started to see things about pop art and little tiny images, and I was reading Tom Wolfe and reading about, Andy Warhol and New York at that time, and reading Marshall McLuhan and all that kind of stuff, and I just thought I can't really do this. I can't commit kind of my ideas to things that people might have to live in for their lifetime. So I thought, well, I'm going to become an artist, except I don't really have any particular talents in I don't paint, I don't sculpt, or throw things together. I started doing, I guess they were, was called happenings, they were little events that I would stage. And a man called Daniel Thomas, who you might know from, he went to Adelaide.
Yeah.
Daniel
wrote, Daniel.
He had his piece in the Sunday Telly, I think it was, where he wrote about exhibitions. And I met with Frank Waters, and I was doing invitations to the gallery, and he was paying me a little bit of money, but mainly little art pieces and stuff. So it was, I did this, I started doing them really, I had really enjoyed doing them, working, meeting the artists, working out what I would do. And so Daniel wrote this thing saying that the invitations were getting better than the exhibitions. And I thought, oh, no. So that was a little bit sort of embarrassing. And then I'd do things like we painted about 100 metres of Underwood Street in Paddington. We painted with red paint and got, dragged off to the police station. And it was just all that kind of thing of just trying to find another way of doing things.
Yeah.
And one night, I had a fabulous little old stables just near Taylor Square, which cost me all of $8 a week.
And
I went down, was with a friend, and went down to this hamburger place. And Jim was there, Jim Sharman was there, 1969. He was with a friend of my friend's getting a burger because he was doing that show called Hair,
the
Metro.
Yeah.
And he'd heard my name in this sort of Daniel kind of world, and he said, "Do you have any interest in theatre?" And I said, "No, theatre? You've got to be joking."
Yeah.
But one thing was, just down the road from where I lived, in fact, in the house where Catherine Thompson, the writer, now lives, was a Qantas pilot called Keith. And Keith would come back with all of the new recordings. So things like Jesus Christ Superstar, Tommy, and all that stuff, I got weeks before uh-huh. was available in the shops.
Yeah.
So Jim, then he said, "Well, come meet Harry." So I went to meet Harry Miller.
Yeah.
And Harry said, "Oh, well, come up to the
theatre." We're talking about Harry M. Miller.
Harry M.
Yeah,
Miller,
yeah.
The Harry M.
Yes,
Miller.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Harry said, "Come up to the Metro because it's a bit, yeah, it's a bit drab, Brian. I think it needs a bit of." Oh, okay. So myself and a horde of friends went up there, and we did the foyer design.
Yeah.
And I got up the front and put all these gels over the lights, so I created mm-hmm. a big rainbow on the front of the thing, and
yeah.
and we painted stuff in the foyer. And I thought, oh, that was fun. And, mm. and then Harry said, oh no, actually, first of all, Jim came back and said, look, Harry's going to be doing Tommy. And I thought, oh, that's different. That's mm. not the normal. Mm. That's not Death of a Salesman yes. or anything like that. That could be interesting. So I did this little design, went down to Melbourne, and in Melbourne met this funny person called Barry Humphries. Barry was putting on a show called A Load of Old Stuff.
Yeah.
So I kind of hung around with him a bit, and then Tommy got cancelled. And I thought, oh, well, fair enough, that was fun. I'd done this little design,
yeah.
and we'd talked about it and played the music a lot. And then Jim came back and he said, look, I've been invited to become an associate director at the Old Tote Theatre Company. Mm. And I said, what on earth would you want to do that for? What? Oh, he said, oh, don't you think it's a good idea? And I said, I think it's a rotten idea, Jim. What the kind of crap they do? And so he said, oh, look, they're starting an actors company.
Mm.
And
so you mean a permanent ensemble?
A permanent ensemble, yeah, which they yeah. hadn't had before.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do As You Like It by Shakespeare. And I thought, oh, God, great, Shakespeare had never read Shakespeare. So he said, why don't you read it? Mm. And I did, and I thought, oh, this is... I didn't have to, I didn't understand all of it.
Mm.
But I kind of got the drift of what it was about. And I said, Jim, well, I can see a way of doing this, you know, through the eyes of a child,
mm-hmm.
you know, where everything's toys and it's mm-hmm. toy land and all that kind of thing. And that's what we did.
Uh-huh.
So we did this production. And in the meantime, Jim had decided not to take on the job.
Uh-huh.
And they brought out a young director from, an Aussie director from London mm-hmm. called Richard Werrett.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how Richard got yeah. to come out.
That's interesting.
Back
yeah.
to Australia to be at the Old Tote in the position that yeah. I think I'd helped talk Jim out of taking on. And then Harry contacted me and said, oh, look, we're going to move here to Melbourne. I want you to redesign it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So I went in to meet Harry and then I did this design and took it in. And he was going to use he said, Jim's not doing it. And I thought, oh, and I didn't quite know why. And I didn't. At that time, I didn't understand any of the kind of, you know, the financial politics or all that
yeah.
kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I wasn't about to say, aren't you, why aren't you doing hair? I just thought I'd just leave it. And I met a director called David Taguri,
mm-hmm.
Japanese-Canadian,
mm.
who'd kind of redone hair in Paris,
mm-hmm.
the Broadway hair,
yeah.
Paris and in London. And he was going to be doing it
in Melbourne. Mm-hmm.
So I showed him the design, and he said, "Oh no, I wanted it to be like the one we did in Paris mm. and London." And I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, because that's what hair is."
Mm.
I said, "Well, I don't happen to agree with you." So I said, "Mr. Miller, would you come in?" So I said, "Harry, look, David doesn't want my design."
Yeah.
So I think it's best. I'll get you someone who can draw up whatever
yeah,
it is
can
David
reproduce
wants, and you can reproduce that. And,
yeah.
and he said, so I went away. And then a couple of days later, I got a call from Jim. Come up to, he lived up in Reservoir Street, up mm-hmm. just up the road here. So I went up my little moped and I went up to Jim's house. And there was the model, my model, sitting on his coffee table. And he said, I'm doing it. So obviously something had been worked out. David yeah. had gone off on a holiday to Japan, because
yeah.
he'd never been to Japan, even mm-hmm. though he was part Japanese. And
Harry
said, well, you know, perhaps you should just go back to London. So that's why we did hair in Melbourne.
Oh, that's extraordinary.
And that led fairly quickly into Superstar.
Superstar, yeah.
And that was...
But that was... Superstar was a huge thing.
Well, yeah,
time.
Well, I didn't know anything.
Yeah.
I remember in hair, we had the Supremes came out on this Perspex disc came out over the audience and it went back. And I remember the kind of production person, Sandy McKenzie, I don't know if you came across Sandy, she said, oh, we're going to hang a leg in front of it. And I thought, oh, fair enough. So when I came the next day and I said, what's that big black... and that's how... Unbelievable. I honestly expected to say, I didn't know what kind of leg, but I thought there'd be a leg in front of this.
Well, for our viewers, the curtains that come in on the side are called legs
Pieces of velvet. Yeah. So that's what it was. and everything to me was, downstage, this side, whatever. Oh, I'd go, and they'd mention other technical things. Yeah, and they'd go, of course. Yeah. And the other thing was that in As You Like It, I'd use things like we had a light up floor. Mm-hmm. It was a box that opened up, mm-hmm. all sorts of things, and every time they'd say, "Oh no, we don't use metal. No, we use timber and canvas, and we paint it." And I would just say, "Why? Why don't you use what they use in what they use in shop windows?"
For instance.
I mean, I didn't know what other areas to talk about.
Because it was traditional to use wooden canvas.
Yeah, and that was the way. So with the Superstar, when I just had this kind of this idea of wanting to have a sphere. I wanted to have that kind of representing the kind of the glory of God. And there was a cylinder that was to represent the kind of the power of the kind of Romans. And then there were two. Two kind of ramps that were almost like in a cross configuration.
Yeah.
So in my mind, we were sort of putting together the cross and the power and the glory.
Hmm.
And of course, in getting to a sphere, there are only five ways you can get there.
Hmm.
And I chose the dodecahedron, which has got 12 pentagons, mm-hmm. and it's the only one that's got an equator.
Uh-huh.
In other words, you can break it in the middle.
Yeah.
So I remember I bought one of those that you could get dodecahedron calendars. Mm. I remember I got one of those and I said, well, this is going to be the set. And they'll go, sure. And I said to Harry, because we were going to do it at the Capitol.
Yeah.
And the Capitol was a complete flea pit.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And it would show almost soft porn movies, and we weren't allowed it. We weren't allowed to go in, so the only way we'd go in was to go and see some of these films.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Well, that was enjoyable in its own way. And I was thinking, sit there watching a movie, thinking, I wonder how big the stage got wide. I wonder how far back it goes.
Mm.
And Harry said, oh, look, it's just like the one in Melbourne. It's about 50 feet deep, and, about 15, 16 metres. So I designed a huge dodecahedron.
Mm.
And then... when we finally got into the theatre to measure it, it was only 20 feet deep.
Oh, gee.
This is before they,
renovated,
took over a street and pushed the theatre back, the back wall of the theatre. So this was over Christmas. I remember, and I was in a complete kind of panic, and I thought, oh, my God. So I just worked it out proportionally, whatever percentage... that as against that, and that's how I reduced it down. And it still used to scrape against the gauze, which was in front of it. And in order to do that, because all of the kind... Oh, it was Stefan Haag.
Stefan Haag.
So Stefan had been in the Vienna Boys Choir.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It got stuck here during the war.
Yeah.
And he was... I think he'd worked with the opera company, hadn't he? He'd worked with...
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the very first thing I ever did with the Australian Opera, as it was then, was Balowin Maskara, and Stefan was the director.
Was he?
But he was very sick at that time. Very sick.
When was that? What year was that?
Oh, that would have been 1974, 75.
Oh, right. So that was just after.
Yeah.
Anyway, Stefan had been brought in by Harry Miller, to be the sort of technical, artistic kind of advisor. Mm-hmm. And I'd heard that he'd done things for the opera where ramps were too steep and entire chorus had slipped down them. And he was saying to Harry, oh, this guy's really got something, Harry.
Yeah.
And he was in Harry's ear, So Harry was really supportive. I don't think Harry knew what was going on. And I don't think I knew what was going on either, except that there was this this nice man who was incredibly supportive. Mm. Yeah, that's fair. But what else can you do? You know. And I remember I showed it to, and I finally got the scale right and everything, and Harry came to my place to see the model, and I showed it to him and did all this and that. And he said, oh, yeah, that's pretty good. He said, well, so what's the big effect in the second act? And I thought, well, there's the crucifixion. and he said, oh, thank God for that. that was the sort of beginning. And then I did a few more things at the Alto with Richard. Mm, this you know, guy had come out. And Philip Headley, another director, had come out.
Yeah, I didn't know Philip. I know his name.
And that was enjoyable. And I just kept being asked to do things. Yeah. And I did.
But they must have been incredibly exciting times. You know, the effect of Superstar was incredible in the city.
Oh, well, that was fantastic. And it was... I remember Anne Churchill Brown said... her and a friend would say, what do we do? Let's go and see Superstar again. Mm. And they had... It was affordable, obviously, back then. And it was like a rock and roll show.
Yeah, and a fantastic cast. You know,
wonderful cast.
Just terrific. Yeah. It was sort of... Well, looking back on it now... it seems to me that it was really about... It was a changing of the guard in the theatre in Australia.
Yeah, well, I think Jim talks about when Harry did Boys in the Band.
Yeah.
And then Hair.
Yeah.
Because the other thing, of course, that was going on around then was that these things were banned.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And there were...
Well, there were demonstrations in the street outside
protests. And
yeah.
We had firebombs thrown into the Capitol.
Oh,
and It was just so crazy, the whole thing. And then suddenly we'd done a concert version at the Adelaide Festival in, that would have been 1970 or 72. No, 1972, sorry, it would have been. Which was done in the tennis courts, remember the old tennis courts there? And Tim and Andrew... Well, I don't know whether it was Androth, but Tim came out and saw both in the show. And they had seen there had been a production of Superstar in London. Mm. Oh, no, sorry, in New York, done by Tom O'Horgan, who directed the original production of Hair. And they hated it.
Mm.
And I did subsequently see that, and I could see why.
Yeah.
It was just too bizarre and had a lot of technical effects that just didn't work.
Yeah.
Big
but
wings
then
that went to
you designed it for London, yeah?
Well, then that's when they said we want Jim to direct it in London.
Mm.
And Jim said, I want me to come along with him. But they said, but we don't want all of that gizmo. we want more like the concert. Mm-hmm. So we did a Brechtian production, but we were in the Palace Theatre.
Yeah.
And the Palace Theatre proscenium is only like 10 metres as against the Capitol, which is 15 or 16.
Yeah.
So I just wouldn't have been able to fit that thing in anyway.
Yeah.
But I'm very sad that the rest of the world didn't see that production, because I think it was very striking, and I think it served the piece really well.
Yeah. I mean, you've had... apart from the incredible career you've had and are still having in Australia, you've had tremendous success internationally too. You won a Tony Award for The King and I, for example.
Well, we did... after we did Superstar in London, we worked at the Royal Court on a couple of little things, including a little musical called The Rocky Horror Show.
Which, yeah, of course.
Which then consumed the next segment of my life doing it around the world. And
I remember seeing Reg do that. It was just fabulous.
Reg was amazing.
Oh, it was sensational.
And that was the wonderful thing that gave Reg the sort of freedom to really be kind of
to do
naughty.
Betty Blockbuster and
then Betty and all that.
And Wonder Woman,
So that was... And after then, actually, Richard, I got a call from Richard Werrett saying, oh, guess who's got the job of the New Sydney Theatre Company? It was like 3 a.m. I thought, oh, I don't know, John Bell? No, me. He said, oh, great, fantastic. And I thought, oh, I've said the wrong thing now.
Yeah.
And he said, and I want you to come out and I want you to be an associate director and I want you to do some directing and all that kind of thing.
Wow.
So I said, okay, oh, Richard, I can't, I'm working on a movie and stuff, I'll come in, I'll come out for a year in 1981, mm. thinking that was far enough away.
Yeah.
And I then I came back and I still had an apartment in London. I planned to go back.
Yeah.
And whereas in London I got kind of put into a bit of a box, you know, mm. weirdo musicals or religious musicals, you know, and I think if I ever hear another musical about the Ark or, mm. or, you know, Moses or the parting of the Red Sea or whatever, I'll go crazy. And science fiction musicals
yeah, yeah.
are coming out.
Yeah.
So, but when I got back, I worked on another film.
Yeah.
I worked on a film called Starstruck. And we'd done an opera, our first opera at the 1980 Adelaide Festival, mm. Death in Venice.
Yeah.
And suddenly the horizon was just a lot wider.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I suppose looking back over all that time, if I'd stayed in London or after King and I's success mm. in New York, if I'd stayed in New York, I probably could have built a reasonable kind of career, but
yeah.
I wouldn't have been able to do things like the Olympics.
And, yeah, yeah, exactly.
I think all of those things, I've just been exceptionally lucky to be able to be, you know, the right person at the right time in the right place.
Well, I think too, if I may say so, you have a great eye for the large scale of it. We did the first opera in Sydney Harbour, La Traviata and Carmen and so on. And
West Side Story. Have any fears.
But I think also too, it was interesting.
I do inside.
That was interesting to hear you talk about initially training as an architect.
Yes. Because
I think
that's where it all comes from.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have a knowledge of structure,
yeah.
of geometry mm. and how things can be done.
Mm.
And that's held me in great stead because yeah. like being out at night with the kids out there and I'm kind of thinking, do you know what a square is?
Mm.
You know,
And
I had to learn everything, like when mm. confronted with having to make the model of Jesus Christ Superstar, for instance, what do I do? What do I use?
Mm.
I remember back in architecture days, Neville Grusman,
mm.
the architect Neville Grusman.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
Neville was a kind of, he was the Frank Lloyd Wright
mm-hmm.
kind of school, and mm-hmm. he did a couple of beautiful houses in the eastern suburbs mm-hmm. and stuff. And he was one of the tutors, and he was the one who said, oh, you know, look, all your ideas, they're probably terrific,
mm.
but you're never going to know until you make a three-dimensional model
mm-hmm.
of what you're talking about.
Mm.
And I learned from that you can do as many sketches and all mm. that kind of thing, but until you actually commit to the kind of spatial kind of relationships and the forms and the just the sizes mm. of things, it won't be anything. And
yeah.
I remember working on the Superstar in London, Jules Fisher
mm-hmm.
lit it. Jules has won about 20 Tonys,
yeah,
and
yeah.
one of the greatest mm. lighting designers in the world. And it was a wonderful, considering no moving lights
yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah.
I think he had, most of us on the follow spots,
mm-hmm.
so the follow spots had hundreds of cues.
And yeah,
it was
yeah.
wonderful.
Mm.
But he said to me, you're very competent. And I remember thinking that was such a compliment because
yeah, yeah.
it was like if you don't have the competence,
mm.
it's not going to happen.
Yeah, you know? Look, it's the same. Well, I mean, with singing, playing a musical,
of course it is. Yeah.
If you don't have the technique,
yep.
to begin yep. with, if you don't have that foundation, it doesn't matter what sort of ideas you have,
yes.
they won't work.
Yeah.
So it's
well, they'll work and they'll be disastrous. Well,
exactly.
Not to say, Lyndon, that everything's been perfect.
No, of course. It never will be. But the point is,
if you have
got that foundation,
yeah, yeah.
then, look, you can make a mess of something, but you figure that out mm. and you know how to solve it yeah. in the future.
Well, to me, it's architecture and pop art. I mean,
yeah.
they're the things that keep me going.
Yeah.
And I don't ever consider that I've done everything.
Hmm.
You know, there's hundreds mm. of things I wanted to do.
Yeah, 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 yeah. But then you started directing operas, as you mentioned.
Design
operas. Yeah. And then, as I said, you did the first opera on Sydney Harbour, mm. La Traviata, with Francesca Zambello. So do you want to talk a little bit about how, you know, when I first asked you to do it, you thought, what would it be and how would you do it?
You came to my house to see the white card model Traviata.
Yeah.
Of La Boheme.
Yeah.
You and Chris Yates.
That's right, yeah.
And I remember you sitting there and you said, oh, look, I've got, we've got this kind of commercial enterprise I wanted to talk to you about. And I thought, oh, okay. And you said La Traviata on the harbour. And I'd never seen the piece.
Mm.
And my thought about it was, oh, it's about chandeliers, I think. So I listened to it and I did the Google search and looked, and there they were, chandeliers everywhere.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that's simply got to be a ginormous chandelier.
Yeah.
And in fact, the first ones I was doing were four times as big, and they just sat in the water and had all sorts of levels and things on them. But as Chris pointed out, the various, you know, the 15 authorities that run the harbour might not allow us to do that. And, you know, there was the thing where the orchestra goes.
That's right.
And there was there were so many just plain practical things to kind of resolve. So when Francesca, I'd made a chandelier, and the set I'd done for the platform was actually a series of curves.
That's right, yeah.
And I showed that to Francesca, and she came out, and she came out for casting, I think.
Yeah.
And
she came out for the presentation, and to talk about how she was going to do the piece all of that.
I thought, because we hadn't really designed it then.
No,
I had a chandelier.
Yeah, yes.
Anyway, and she came to my place, and she said, oh, no, I need a much bigger canvas because it's... We've got the great big waltz scene, we've got all these kind of things. I thought, oh, okay. And I happened to have a little frame sitting on a little shelf. And so I took that down and I said, well, maybe we have the chandelier and we have that.
Mm.
And that's exactly what it became. Mm. And the curved thing, some years later, Gail Edwards was over and we were talking about Salome.
Yeah.
And I pulled it out of a cupboard and I said, how about this? Ah, oh, perfect, because it gave us the height, you know, for all that kind of thing.
Well, it was a fantastic production.
And it was, I really felt quite close to Francesca. I don't think she was particularly interested in the chandelier, to be quite honest.
Well, it was interesting. There are a few things that Francesca wasn't that keen on, because from the very beginning, I said, well, we have to have fireworks, you know.
Yes, that's right.
If there's a show in Sydney outside, it has to have fireworks. Yeah. And so right up to the general, when we're on the site and we're sitting there in the tiered seating with Francesca, and she turned to me and she said, oh, Lyndon, you know, do we have to have fireworks? And I said, yeah, we do. So a few minutes later, when we had got to the section where the fireworks went off and we had an invited audience, the audience went bananas.
Crazy,
and she turned to me and said, okay, I get it.
She's wonderful like that, Hal.
Yeah.
Once we'd invested in the set being like that, I thought that the way that she used all the elements was pretty special.
Oh, yeah, it's fantastic, yes. Well, with Francesca too, she's got a great eye for big events.
Yeah.
And also for an event that works in that particular space, you know, using whatever you've got there, the Harbour Bridge, the Opera House and the city, and incorporating that into the show.
Yep.
Has been a major part of the success of it.
Yeah. Well, I remember when we brought the chandelier across from Whitebury on the barge.
That was a fantastic day.
Coming over with that and we'd arrived. Mm. You know, the hand of thing had arrived.
Yeah.
And I thought that was... And I think it was... Yeah, I think from all angles, we got it kind of right. You know?
Yeah, well, I mean, having a motif like that chandelier was brilliant. And seriously, it worked brilliantly because everyone associated it with the show.
Yeah.
And that's what we needed.
Yep.
So it was a fantastic thing. Look, you've done so much, films, theatre pieces, operas, everything. Is there any area that you, and major events, that you really like doing, or you like doing everything?
Well, There's a touch of the grass is always greener, you know.
Yeah.
I remember when I was working on a movie, you know, and you think, oh, God, I wish I was doing a little show somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
When you're working on a little show, you think, oh, I wish I was doing a big opera somewhere.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
No, I think as long as I don't get bogged down doing one thing and trying to always move into another area, I think there's... And I think with the advances in the way things can be done.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of the way that theatre's being done now, and a lot of the way you're doing opera now with the big screens and stuff. I mean, I remember in the 70s thinking, oh, it'd be wonderful if we had big... And to be quite honest, I kind of got over that.
Yeah.
And it was... because I think making the big statements, I think certainly doing the closing ceremony of the Olympics was... Well, that was I'd been part of Rick's team for a few years, and we'd listen to presentations from the Atlanta Games. And I remember saying to them, "Excuse me, why didn't you include Coca-Cola in it? given the Coke
that came from Atlanta. Exactly,
the home of Coca-Cola, and there seemed to be areas that you they couldn't touch. So I think when we and Rick would say, "Oh, in the opening, we're doing this, then are you interested in that?" "No, I'm not really interested in that." He said, "Why don't you just do the party at the end? You just do the closing." So I got together with a writer, and no one was interested in that. We had our own little world out at the Carriage Works, and what is now the Carriage Works. We were in an old train carriage.
Yeah.
That was our department. And we came up with this sort of story with Dame Edna and Kylie, and it was all based on. Remember that what was it called? That bug that was going to come.
Oh, the Millennium Bug.
Yeah. So it was all. Edna and Kylie were going to save the world.
Yeah, but you did shows with Kylie.
I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
But what happened then was that everybody started pulling out.
Uh huh.
And like the Bee Gees said, well, are we going to be the top of the bill? Oh, there's no bill because it's just like, you know.
Yeah.
It's the Olympic, and AC/DC and Barry pulled out, and so many people pulled out that my life at that time was who's gone today? Oh, okay. Well, and we were that close to having 100 Jake the Pegs. I mean, can you imagine? Gee. I promise you that was mentioned. Oh, well, there's Ralph Harris. Maybe and it was we just got there with enough kind of content, and after they said, oh look, because I thought we'd have the whole field, and they said, oh look, there's 10,000 athletes, and we really can't afford to give them all a seat in the stands. They have to be on the field. So all you've got is the ring, is the running track, and you're going to have a little stage in the middle.
Oh.
And there'd been a lot of talk about having a globe of the world. And so the minute I heard that, I knew exactly how to do that, which would be another dodecahedron.
Yeah, sure.
And I thought, I don't know that I really want to... I don't know if I want to do that again. And I sat on it for 2 weeks as I heard we talked about helicoptering something in, and we talked about inflatables and all that kind of thing. And I finally said, look... Here's how we do it. So I was then over in London working on the King and I at the Palladium, and I was meant to go to this big rock and roll place in France or somewhere where they build the sets for the Rolling Stones and all that kind of thing. And I got a call saying, oh, we found this ride and we're gonna put it on this ride. And it was just a big thing that had a lot of things that spiraled around and that they'd worked out how they could put the dodecahedron on that so it could go flat, it could rise up into the shape, and then it could go up 30 metres in the air.
Wow.
And I thought, well, that's pretty good.
Yeah,
so that's what we did.
Yeah.
And the and it just became a parade.
Yeah.
And Rick said, look, just do it like the biggest backyard barbecue you can.
Yeah.
And with the Kylie thing...
That was a huge success.
Well, it was... See, what happened after the opening, and the opening was... So fabulous.
Yeah.
The feeling was everyone was completely exhausted, but they realised that they couldn't let the closing just be the end of the show kind of thing. So suddenly we're out at this aerodrome, and it was dusty and it was hot. There was a few portaloos and a bit of scaffolding and stuff. Suddenly all of the catering arrived and all of the star things arrived. And it was for 2 weeks. It was really glorious.
Yeah, yeah.
And, But I'd also designed the, you know, the podiums they get the medals on. Mm-hmm. So I had a, I had an access all areas pass. Mm. And I thought, oh, I'll be able to go to the, and just, oh, I think we should move them a little bit. Or move the flags a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But because we were stuck out of this aerodrome rehearsal, I couldn't do anything.
Yeah, yeah.
I couldn't see anything. And on the day, we only had one day of rehearsal, they said, oh, look, the, there's been an accident and the dodecahedron's been, you know, crashed and it won't be able to rise up.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, my God. So I was with you know, some of the people worked on it. Mm. So we thought, oh, we really need to get a drink.
Yeah.
And there, it was a dry area,
yeah,
except
yeah.
there was this big party going on. Mm. And we found it. I remember I bumped into Dawn Fraser.
Oh, really?
I knew Dawn from... Oh, that's another story, but I knew Dawn from a long time ago. Mm. I said, Dawn, where's the party? Oh, yes, yeah, around there. And so we turned our accreditations around and walked in, and there was Henry Kissinger and the king of this and that and
fantastic.
John Howden and the whole thing.
Yeah.
And we had a couple of drinks. And then we looked out the window and we saw the thing slowly sort of and it went up, and the whole room by then was watching this thing and cheering. And and then we brought out the big Cupid dolls, if you remember.
Yeah.
And it was so windy, their dresses were blowing off. And we just thought the night was going to be a complete
disaster.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it would have been very funny, but so the level of tension that you can understand we were in was because
we had
great seats and stuff. Like on the opening, when the thing got stuck,
exactly.
and you felt the. You know, 80,000 people kind of
holding their breath. Yeah,
holding their breath.
Yeah,
while
yeah.
So, but we know we got everything. Everything happened, and because I'd done this little tour with Kylie when she was broke and she lost a record contract and down to her last 20 million or something. So she was going to do a little intimate tour, and I went to this rehearsal and Chong Lim, do you know Chong the piano player?
Yeah.
So he's playing and the music. Intro to this song, and I thought, oh, that's Dancing Queen, the ABBA song. No, it's not. It's going to be one of. And then it ended up, and she did Dancing Queen.
Mm.
And I thought, well, she's going to be doing that at the Olympics.
Yeah.
I was the person who pushed that through to make sure that Kylie would do Dancing Queen.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
And she did, and it was.
But then after that, you designed a show for her.
No, I'd done the show before.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Before, yeah.
I was working on a Kylie show and on a Danny Minogue show. She was in Greece that John Frost did.
Yeah.
And I think I'm probably the only person to have worked, designed for both Minogues at the same time.
That's fantastic. Well, Brian, it's been delightful having you here today and to
thank
talk
you,
about your extraordinary career.
And thank you for that. I mean, that opportunity of doing the... You know how sometimes you get to the point where you think, oh, well... You know, you asked me before, have you done everything? And then suddenly something like that comes along.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I wouldn't have ever sat down and thought, let's do an opera on the harbour. Mm. You know what I mean? And you did. And I think that it was just fabulous to be part of that. And I certainly hope that you get to do them for a long time once the world clears.
Yeah, exactly. Well, me too. But, you know, you have been a major part of the success of Handa Opera on Sydney
Onwards.
Harbour. So we will. But thank you again.
Thank
it's
you.
Been really delightful to have
okay.
this chat.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to In Conversation with Lyndon Terracini. We hope you've enjoyed the chat and we'd love for you to subscribe to the podcast. That way, you'll get each new episode as they're released. We also hope to see you in the theatre in the not-too-distant future. And you can stay up to date with all we've got going on at opera.org.au.